if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod. And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Taryn's yoga pants. Sorry, I had to say it. It had to be mentioned.
Thank you for joining us again here for the Sliders Rewatch. Today we're discussing two more episodes, Dead Man Sliding and Electric Twister Acid Test. So getting into our first episode this week, Dead Man Sliding was written by Nan Hagen and directed by Richard Compton. This originally aired November 29th, 1996.
Not only did we find doorways to parallel universes, but we also discovered that on a lot of these other Earths, there were doubles of each of us. You know, like twin versions of ourselves.
Yes, doppelgangers, if you will. And that brings us to the heart of the matter. This man is not the man you saw on that tape.
I'm not even the Quinn Mallory of your world.
And he is certainly no murderer. He merely happens to be your Quinn's double. And that makes him no more guilty of this crime than anyone here today.
Excellent strategy, Mr. Arturo. You definitely scored some points for inventiveness.
Well, we aren't done yet.
Oh, I'm afraid you are, because that is all the time we have. Now, it is time to...
We start with our intrepid heroes braving the streets of Hollywood when they find a wallet containing $300 on the ground. Anyone walking by averts their gaze and steers clear of the wallet while Quinn decides to grab it and look for ID. As a woman fires a stun gun from afar, narrowly missing Quinn, Arturo pushes him to leave the wallet be, and they walk away unharmed. As they sit and laugh over funny camera shots they've taken, they surmise that there's not much crime in this world given how people leave their money, wallets, and purses just lying about. The woman from earlier, bounty hunter Taryn, tracks down Quinn and aggressively arrests him for the crimes committed on this world by Alt Quinn, or Crime Quinn. She takes Quinn Prime to the Judgment Game TV show, a sort of People's Court meets American Idol meets Let's Make a Deal program, in which criminals are tried on TV before the audience who call in and vote on who is guilty or innocent. Wade and Remy break into the building to find Taryn, but Wade's attempts to convince her of Quinn's innocence fall flat. Later, watching the show and seeing Arturo's and Quinn's defense, Taryn starts to have second thoughts about Quinn Prime. After receiving a guilty verdict, Quinn attempts to escape, but he is beaten rather severely by the guards and taken away to a holding cell while the trio goes to try and find Crime Quinn. Wade plays Punk Wade and ferrets information from Crime Quinn's old girlfriend. Meanwhile, Taryn investigates further on her own, discovering that Quinn Prime does not have the scars that Crime Quinn does, meaning that she finally believes he actually is innocent and not her Quinn Mallory. As the trio chase down Crime Quinn, Taryn shows up and stuns Crime Quinn. Crime Quinn reveals an alibi that proves he could not be the person on the video that killed the man, Wade hacks into the game's computers and they discover proof that Phil, the person responsible for finding people to capture to be on the Judgment Game and Taran's boss, was altering footage to frame innocent people. He shows up and pulls a gun, but Wade manages to overpower him with a taser. Together with Crime Quinn, they develop a plan to help Quinn Prime escape.
Deanne, right?
It depends who's asking.
Yeah, well, my problem's not with you, it's with the creep. You took him back again, didn't you?
Excuse me.
Hey, don't pretend like Quinn's not shacked up with you. Where else would the jerk go?
What's it to you?
Nothing. Not if he knocked me up and doesn't want anything to do with me or the baby.
But you're caring for him?
Look, all I want is an address, okay? I need him to give me some fly money so I can get home. He does that, I'm gone. He's all yours.
What, you think I want him? I'm tired of his baggage, honey. Never ends. Tell you what, here. Help yourself. These are my pills, okay? Here. Hey, you tell me you better be gone by the time I get home or I'll have Joey help him move, okay?
All right, well, let's get into a bit of trivia.
Okay, so basically the opening was almost the same, just a little bit of an altered opening. They started with looking at the fake pictures of that they took of themselves photoshopped into various magazine covers, and they were going to have some more. There's supposed to be like Quinn's face on David Hasselhoff's body with the Baywatch beauties all around him, and Arturo is Rambo. So there was going to be a couple more to look at besides what they showed in there. We also hear what Taran says to the guy in the street when she's trying to track down them. She goes up to the old guy, the vendor selling maps, and she gives him some money, but you actually hear that exchange. So you can actually read those lines over at dimensionsofcontinuity.com and they're Lost and Found section. When Taran takes Quinn away, Arturo fights with them a lot more. There's more of an altercation, a little bit more physical. We also see the case of the boy who spray painted. Remember, there was a guy being whipped for spray painting something. You actually get to see that on the actual show. They were going to show him trying to defend himself and being prosecuted and voted guilty and all that as well. They had a guest star, but that was not the guest star they wanted originally. Originally, they wanted someone named Nipsey Russell. Do you know who Nipsey Russell is?
No.
I didn't either. But after reading about him, I was like, oh, I think I've seen him before. He was a famous game show celebrity back in the day. So like late 70s on a show called maybe it was late 60s, The Match Game. You've heard of that show?
Yeah.
So apparently he was on there a lot. He was on the original Passwords, Hollywood Squares, To Tell the Truth, and Pyramid. So he was one of those celebrities that would be on those shows quite a bit back in the day. He was like an American comedian, I guess. And I've never seen his comedy act, but I'm sure I've watched some of those shows on like the Game Show Network and whatnot. So I'm sure I've seen him before. And he was supposed to be the original guy. Instead, they got someone else that we'll talk about later in our discussion. When Wade tries to convince Taran, about Quinn, she walks off when, Taran walks off and Wade's like, all right, well, I can't do anything else here. Originally, that scene was going to be extended and Phil was going to come in and tase Wade and then she was going to be drug outside. So that was a little bit more dramatic,
Wow.
There was some slight line changes, Wade starts saying, we've got to tell them about sliding and how this is not their Quinn. And Arturo had a great line about, oh, that's perfect. Then you can go out and keep them straight on Santa Claus and Easter Bunny as well as Dimensions. Good idea, So it was another one of those great lines. It's so easy to write, I guess, for Arturo, with those great little one-liners he has. Let's see. There was more when Quinn visits with the gang, when they come to see him in the lockup. There's more with a guard getting very aggressive with Quinn and like clubbing him down, like really beating him. And then Wade gets Taran into the building using her stun gun and then lays it down on the table. Because when we see that, when she and Taran get confronted by Phil, she just sort of reaches out and grabs the taser. And we were like, how did the taser get there? Originally, it was Taran's stun gun. And she just lays it on the table there while they work on the computer and find the evidence they were looking for. So that's how that taser got there originally. And then also there is a missing line that indicates that Taran actually got Crime Quinn safe because she believes, you know what, he is innocent. He does have an alibi, and they were going to frame him anyway. So she gets him to safety as well. So you really see the turnaround in her character.
Yeah, because the alternate Quinn actually kind of just drops out there at the end.
Exactly. It just disappears. You don't know what happened to him, but apparently the intention was for him to be saved also, you know, and safe in the world.
I swear, Taryn, it wasn't me. I wasn't even in town the day that all went down.
You can't prove that. You're going to be sorry. You said it.
Where was I? I was with Chicago Bob, and we were down at Del Mar Racetrack all day. Yeah, there's some betting slips in my wallet, right on the jacket, on the bed. Right there.
Thank you.
Inside pocket.
There's 2, 6, and 7.
See? You see? There's no way I could have been all the way down to Del Mar, then back up in some alley in Hollywood by 4. Come on, Tarrant. You know me. I'm into small jobs. A heist here, a joyride there, a couple of phony checks. I'm not the type to kill some bum.
Oh, come on. We all saw the tape. It was definitely you.
Look, I don't know how my face got on that tape, but I'm telling you, it wasn't me.
I know how his face got on that tape.
Of course.
What is that?
Now, there is no way that that is me. That guy is huge.
All right, so getting into our main discussion about this episode. So it's interesting bringing this episode forward to where it's supposed to be, because originally this aired like mid-season. When you've got them enjoying Hollywood and everything like that, it makes more sense because they're really trying to drive home the fact that they're going to be landing in LA for a large portion of the time.
Exactly.
So that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a starter for the episode.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, they're walking around and doing like touristy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're setting up, you know, the superimposing the heads on the bodies and all
right.
that, which is normal stuff. But then they're taking pictures. Like, they right. got a disposable camera. And I'm like, are they going to take those pictures with them? Like, Wade's going to stuff them in her diary that we never see?
Yes, exactly. And we've talked about that before. Like, do they carry stuff? Because they never have backpacks. You know, it would be a simple thing if they had a backpack with them, you know?
It's one of those random things, too. Like, if you're in Hollywood and she's just like, she sees the Hollywood star of Dolly Parton, and she's like, oh my God, I love Dolly Parton. Let's get a picture with that. I'm like, yeah. Not once have you ever mentioned Dolly Parton or country music or.
Yeah, I don't see her as being into country music, you know? She doesn't seem like the country music type, especially not old country music like that.
Yeah. So it is that kind of thing. It's just like you see it, so you're like, ooh, let's get a picture. I liked it. I kind of like them sort of just like touristy in Hollywood. Moving on, the other thing I noticed too is that they're in the Royal Chancellor Hotel.
Right. Because they're not in San Francisco anymore.
Yeah, so it's a nice change, you know? You can't have the Dominion.
Mm-hmm.
As if like it, I guess you could say that the Dominion could be a franchise or something, but yeah, it was just a nice little drop thing that I noticed.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I guess then moving into like the main part of the show is when Quinn gets arrested and sent to this judgment game.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, this is the main thing. And I see what they're trying to do, like tying it in with Hollywood.
Right.
You know, they're not getting into movies, but they're getting into TV. But the whole fact that the legal system is run on this TV show, and these law shows exist in our world, you know, you got your Judge Judy, Judge
right.
John Deed and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're small claims court. This is the entire legal system. Mm-hmm. In a TV show. So what did you think of it?
Well, you know, like, I actually didn't mind. I thought it was kind of neat. I mean, I wouldn't want to go on that show myself and leave my fate up to, you know, the viewing audience. You know, I don't count them as my peers, the viewing audience, you know? It just seemed like it wouldn't exactly be a fair trial, I don't think. Because it's all about ratings and how, you know, fun you make it for them. As we saw, you know, when they started talking about, you know, alternate dimensions, people were like, oh, that's cool, you know, and they started to, you know, liken, you know, their idea a little bit more, like their defense. But I didn't mind it so much. I thought it was a neat mashup of like the, you know, like the different shows of like, let's make a deal because you get to choose your punishment, you know, door number one or door number two. You got the people calling in, you know, which is very popular now with all the, you know, American Idol and The Voice and, you know, the America's Got Talent or Britain's Got Talent, all those things where you call in and you vote. You know, it was kind of, I thought it was kind of neat. I guess it would be difficult to imagine that they would do the whole justice system like that, because we didn't really get background on how that came to be. But, you know, like, people do go for that type of thing. They, you know, they watch movies like, was it like Jackass, where people do ridiculous things, and Fear Factor, where people are put up to do, you know, like, just crazy, insane things. I think people would get into something like this.
It's an interesting concept of the game show, and the mm-hmm. way that they weaved in the aspects of a game show into mm-hmm. the trial was really good too. Like, I really laughed out loud when it's Quinn and Arturo are explaining the theory of multiple dimensions. And it seems like Arturo is really pleased with himself, because he's like, you know, he's got this big smile on his face about, you know, oh, I think they're really loving it. I think we've got a trial here.
Right.
And then he turns around and says, well, we're just getting started. And then the host is just like, no, you don't, because we're out of time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't know. Something about it, I enjoyed the idea of that. I just don't, like I said, I don't think it would have been the only thing out there, like, for crime, you know, to deal with the, you know, to do the whole justice system like that. I think maybe it was just part of it, like, just for smaller crimes, not for bigger crimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Stick with grounding it in the reality of, we'll televise small claims court, but not
the entire
legal system. Like, he's on trial for murder.
Yeah, I know. And to have to, like, condense your defense into, like, you know, let's say it's like an hour show, you know, you got like 45 minutes to defend yourself and that's it. You know, it's like, I don't know.
And then putting it out to a voting audience who can vote not guilty.
Exactly.
If they just kind of like the person, like if the person puts on a good show, they're just like, okay, not guilty.
Exactly. And he's
you
a
put
murderer,
a murderer so. Back on the street. Yeah.
You know, which I got to say, they did, I don't know if you caught it, but they did reference OJ.
I didn't.
Okay. It's when Wade and Remy are outside watching the trial go on, and that guy is talking to him. And he's like, hey, you know, this is an L.A. audience. Not the first time a guilty guy has beaten a murder rap. So, yeah, that was a reference there to O.J., because that's basically, you know, what happened there, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a little sly reference, you know, which I thought was pretty cool. There were some special celebrity guests in this episode that I'm sure that no one really caught. And, like, I don't think I would have really caught them if I hadn't been interested in, like, older TV, you know? Because I used to watch a lot of that, because my parents would watch a lot of it. And it wasn't really my thing, but I saw it as I was growing up, and then years later I would watch them myself, you know, and I actually liked them. Yeah. The game show host is an actor from the old TV show, the comedy Happy Days.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The game show host is, I think his name is Donnie Most, and he played Ralph Mouth on Happy Days. He was like the goofy, practical joker, redhead guy. Remember him?
Yeah, now you say it. I can see it.
Yeah. And then the prosecutor that came out, they said, this is Lawrence Hilton Jacobs. And he is actually a star as well from the old TV show Mr. Cotter. Welcome back, Cotter.
Oh, okay.
He was Freddie Boom Boom Washington. And the reason I knew that, I didn't catch it at first. When I watched this back in 96, I did not remember that. I did not know that. But when I watched it this time, you know how he comes out and then he takes his applause and he looks right at the camera and he goes, hi there. That part right there.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a second. I know that. And if you look up Freddie Boom Boom Washington, hi there, that's his catchphrase from Welcome Back, Cotter. Like, whenever he was doing, like, a special, you know, report in the class, like, he would get up in front of the whole class and everyone would be, like, hooping and hollering, you know, yay, all right, let's hear it. And, like, he would pause and everyone would be quiet and he'd look right at him. He'd say, hi there. And then he would go into his, well, I'm going to give this report now. You know, but, like, that was his special little, you know, little line that he did. So,
I remember he was, like, the cliched black guy.
Oh, yeah.
The show. He had the afro with the comb in it and everything.
Definitely, yeah. So, yeah, we have two celebrity guests in this episode that really no one would know. You know, people who were watching Sliders back then probably had no idea who these people were, you know?
Yeah, and they set that up at the beginning, too, where they're talking They've got like a map to the stars and like all the stars they don't know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, in this alternate reality, maybe they went on to be a bit bigger than they ever were.
There you go. There you go.
And that's not far out of the realm. I mean, John Travolta did very well for himself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And he started on Welcome Back, Carter. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, getting into the alt Quinn, the crime Quinn, as you call him.
Right.
He is a terrible criminal. And it makes me wonder, how is he still alive?
Yeah.
Like, they set up that he'd been on the Judgment game like a few times before.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he kept getting off.
Yeah. And he's so stereotypical, you know, like his accent and everything. Like, it sounds like he grew up like in, you know, Brooklyn or New Jersey or something, the way he talks, you know, not from California. Yeah, he really is not he doesn't seem like the smartest criminal in the world. I just thought it was a little cheesy for me. He's like, baby, I got all kinds of skills, you know, the way like, oh my God. I mean, maybe it's a way for him to, you know, for Jerry to stretch his acting abilities, I guess. But I don't know. He was a little too stereotypical for me. You know, it's like when they did the Mafia episode, you know, Greatfellas. They were all so like, obvious stereotypical, you know, mob members. It was just like a little too much for me.
Yeah. And you know, in a world where it seems like crime is way down, like people pretty much don't commit crimes because of the way the legal system is.
Right.
Wade and Remy immediately break the law. Yes. In order to prove Quinn's innocence. Like right. They just break into this, like, I guess it's like the studio, which is the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so I'm like, really? You need to prove that he's innocent so you break the law. Like, you're going to end up on the show yourself.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, I understand they're taking risk for Quinn, but still, come on.
Well, they took some pretty big risks. They're in a hallway, and the guard is just down at the other end. I mean, like, it's not like they're hiding. They're in the same hallway as the guard. All the guard has to do is turn around, and they're caught. But they're climbing up on the table. The vent is conveniently easily opened, you know, and they can crawl right into it so simply. I was just like, oh my God, this is a little, I don't know. Cause I think you'd hear, like, if you were a guard, you should be like really on guard, you know, like looking around, making sure nothing's going on, but they're right there in that hallway, not that far away, and they don't get caught.
And Wade knows the sound of an editing room, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, what's that sound? Oh, it's the editing room.
It's the editing room. And it was so loud. Like, that editing was really, really loud. Like, obvious, you could hear, like, the scrubbing of the audio and everything. But I don't know. It's a little bit over the top, a little bit too much for me.
But, you know, it pays off, I guess, because Wade sort of runs into Taryn.
Right.
The bounty hunter.
With the yoga pants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I got to mention it. All right.
She's a strange-looking bounty hunter.
She is. She's, yeah, definitely. I've seen other bounty hunters on other shows, and they don't all look like that.
You know, she sort of, like, puts her case, and it takes a while for her to come around. Like, I guess just, like, between what Wade says to her, how Arturo and Quinn sort of present their case on the show.
Right.
She sort of comes around, and that leads to them deciding that the only way they can get him out is to find the other Quinn.
Right. I think a lot of it was how Quinn carried himself too, because obviously this Quinn, our Quinn Prime, is very, very different than Crime Quinn, who's just like so obnoxious, you know, the way he talks and he acts and everything. Our Prime Quinn is very calm, more collected, you know, so I think all that together just makes her think something's not right about this guy, you know, something's different.
So. Yeah. Well, the accent is like you said. Like, well, yeah, it sounds like he grew up in Brooklyn or something.
Exactly. They go off to find Crime Quinn. And this is something where I was like, this doesn't feel real natural to me. They're all sitting on the hill there. And Wade starts commenting, you know, about how she's glad they're all there for her. And Arturo has a tender moment with her. And, you know, it's supposed to be this like nice emotional thing, tying them all together. But for me, it just didn't feel like very true. I don't know. Not that they were lying, but it just didn't feel maybe not as well acted or something. Cause they had moments like that in Dino Veritas, and it felt very good. Like, it felt natural. It felt real. This time, I just wasn't feeling it.
I don't know. It might have been the location, cause they're just like sitting up on this hill.
Right. In a suburban street, you know?
Yeah. It's bizarre because there is also another awkward scene where Wade goes to this punk bar called Punky Pink's.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
and dresses all punk.
Yeah.
Which is more glam punk, if anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And she talks to this girl called Deanne,
mm-hmm.
who is, I guess she's known as like an associate of Quinn's or something, and they sort of have this thing going.
Mm-hmm.
And she lays out this whole thing about being pregnant. She just wants to get some money from him and stuff like that. So Deanne's like, he's at my house. Just go and wait there.
Right.
And then when they get to this neighborhood, I'm like, wow, you know, for a glam punk chick who works bar.
Yeah.
She lives in a nice neighborhood.
She makes good tips, I guess, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, it is a little off.
I didn't really like Punk Wade. It just, I don't know. Something about it, I was like, ugh, no, no. And I didn't, I mean, not to go too far into the future, but when Wade goes vampire, you know, that I didn't like that look either. Anyway.
I don't know, the pink bra with the see-through top. Like, that's punk.
Yeah, this is true. That's very punk.
Yeah. And then, you know, Arturo has a moment where he sort of explains the pros of the justice system. And it reminded me of back in Luck of the Draw when he and Quinn were talking about it. And he was like, well, can you argue with results?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, it's high crimes down and the judgment game seems to be doing its job. But then they uncover this conspiracy about how the judgment game is framing people in order to get better ratings because there's a rival show called Justice Tonight.
Right.
So that's, you know, why Al Quinn is actually being set up and why Crime Quinn is pleading his innocence.
I'm glad that there was more than just one game doing it. I think that makes it a little bit better. There's not just one show doing it. But like we said, it doesn't make sense that it would, like, why would you choose? Well, I guess you can't choose to go on one show over the other because you might do better on one network than the other network. You might be guilty on, you know, ABC, but you might be completely, you know, innocent on, like, you know, CBS, you know, depending on what show you were on.
Yeah. And I guess each show sort of employs their own team of bounty hunters.
So right. Exactly.
The fact that Taryn caught Quinn. That's why he was sent to the judgment game. Yeah.
Right.
There were probably other bounty hunters out there who had his bounty. She just happened upon him.
I have to sort of agree with Arturo that there's a lot of pros to this type of justice system, but then what about those innocent people? Like Remy says, you know, like, it's not so great if you're that innocent man that's on the show and there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm. And again, it's tying in the TV things with the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's going so wrong that they're framing people is about ratings.
Right.
They need more people to watch their show
yep.
and not Justice Tonight.
So we've got Wade and Taryn, and they discover the evidence, you know, that the people on the show are being framed. And, you know, Phil comes in and altercation, and then the alarm is hit. And then, you know, it's like, the place goes into lockdown and the guards are coming, but the guards are walking down the hall like, oh, la-di-da-di-da, let's go see what's happening in the criminal waiting area. I'm sure it's not that important, you know? Like, they're not in a hurry at all. They're just like strumming down the hall. I'm like, you might want to go a little quicker because the alarm is going off for a reason.
When Quinn comes out to the courtyard to sort of meet with the other sliders and he gets like so annoyed at the cameras.
Right.
And all that, so he starts smashing them and stuff. And I was like, why do they suddenly care that someone is filming them?
Right.
Exactly. You know, and it happens later after the episode, after they escape too, when someone in the house has a video camera and tapes them, and Quinn has to like go in and get the tape. And I'm like, seriously, like, why does anyone care?
I thought it was odd that he just went like right into the house. Didn't knock. He just, boom. Just, you know, in home invasion right there, you know?
Yeah,
just
yeah, it's break the law again on a world exactly. where we don't know what the justice system is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you said, they escape. Though, you know, they escape from the place and they get to a cliff. And they have like 10 seconds till they slide and they decide to jump off the cliff. Just trust me. Have some faith. Here we go. And they jump off the cliff into the vortex.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it's 10 seconds. You can't like stall for 10 seconds or even like get back in the car and drive the other way and drive the whole thing through the vortex. You've done it before. You could do it again.
Yeah. You could fake them out or something.
Yes.
You know, pretend you've got a gun in your pocket. They're going to wait
right.
for 10 seconds at least.
Well, it's the dramatic license. You know? Well, you know, I'm torn about this episode because I did like it, but I think that if they had picked one way to go, all right, because parts of the episode were really funny and amusing, and then other parts of it were really, really dark. Like when he gets beaten down by the guards, like it was pretty dark, and like Arturo was like, you know, he was like, leave that boy alone, you know, and he's trying to defend him, and they pull him off and take him away, and Arturo's distraught. It was very dark. When Quinn's waiting in his cell, you know, it feels very just like intense, you know, very dramatic. But then you counter this with all this funny stuff, and I thought maybe if they had went all the way dark and made it a much more serious show, maybe it would have been a little bit better for me.
Yeah, I agree. The aspect of the judgment game was a bit cheesy and goofy.
In fact, isn't there another episode or something that involves not exactly the judgment game, but something where people are put on trial, or it was something about religion, I think, and being sent to another world with a vortex coming later that this episode reminded me for some reason.
Yeah, they kind of tie it to religion or something.
Right. So it kind of reminded me of that a little bit. But yeah, I thought, you know, like this could have been an amazing dramatic episode, you know, without the funny stuff. Cause you didn't really need that funny stuff. You could have done it, you know, very serious, and like you would have felt like, you know, terrible for Quinn, you know, like really terrible, just because it's a hard predicament to be in. Like, you know, his double committed the crime and now he's on trial for it. It's like, how are they going to get him out of this?
And now another episode of That's Random with Remy.
I've never been banished before, except for that time in Abilene. Cowboys just didn't get Motown.
This has been another episode of That's Random with Remy.
So getting into our second episode discussion today, the episode is Electric Twister Acid Test, written by Scott Smith Miller and directed by Oscar L. Costo. This originally aired October 4th, 1996.
Professor, the timer's stabilizing.
What? Of course. These rocks must be lodestone.
Well, what do the rocks have to do with the timer? Lodestone or magnetites, whatever electrical charge is interfering with the timer, must be on the same polarity as these rocks.
Yes, and as you two will remember from your elementary school science...
We get it, Professor. Opposites attract, similars repel.
This is good news. This is very good news indeed. How long till we slide?
23 hours, 8 minutes.
Our sliders slide atop a bobsled into a desert landscape, complete with electric tornadoes that they soon see being surfed by a young boy on a board. As the boy loses control, Quinn goes to help, but the boy quickly runs away. As our group journeys through the desert, they theorize that the whole surface of the planet could be electrically charged, preventing the timer from stabilizing and opening the vortex. Luckily, they find an oasis of a town that is immune to the electrical charges due to a barrier of lodestone rocks. The sliders meet Jenny right before a tornado jumps the lodestone rocks and enters the town, attracted by the timer. Franklin and the townspeople appear, taking our group captive, interrogating Quinn brutally. It is revealed that these people live a simple Amish-style life, trying to defend themselves against outcasts who try to steal from them. Indeed, Franklin has executed many outcasts, yet they still keep coming back, near impossible to catch due to what Franklin surmises must be a spy in their midst. Quinn, Remy, and Arturo are banished, but the townspeople decide to keep Wade since she is of childbearing age. The guys wander the tornado-laden desert trying to stay safe, but Remy is hit by a bolt of electricity and passes out. Luckily, the young surfer boy from earlier comes to their rescue, taking them below the ground to meet Jenny's outcast brother, Reed, who explains his father, Franklin, was a research scientist once and worked on creating electrical, controllable tornadoes for leveling buildings or plowing fields easily. The government found out and decided to appropriate the technology for use as weapons. Meanwhile, Wade learns that a scientific accident resulted in twisters that destroyed everything except this small community. Jenny reveals herself as the aforementioned spy, which Franklin soon discovers and decides to make an example out of both women, shunning Jenny and imprisoning them both. A failed jailbreak results in Franklin and his cronies trying to drown Wade as punishment. They effect a rescue, saving Jenny and the timer, and return to their underground bunker, where Arturo has been working on a way to neutralize the interference, thus enabling the timer to work properly. Franklin attempts to prevent the group from sliding but is stopped as Reed and Quinn show up, overpowering him and explaining to Jacob that Franklin is responsible for the destruction of their world.
Reed's passionate speech inspires Franklin to let our group go, working together as father and son to support their slide.
Jacob! Let the girl do her work!
Just bringing her some water.
Who elected him God?
That's what you say. This town wouldn't even be here if it wasn't for Franklin. When the Twisters came, he was the one that figured out the lodestone would save us.
So that lets him dictate who lives and who dies?
We need to teach her our ways, Jenny. She wants to stay alive.
I already know your ways, and I'm not sure they're worth living under.
All right, so as always, we have a bit of trivia here.
Okay, so there's some extra lines for a lot of the scenes, just slightly different lines, alternate takes, nothing, you know, very major to the story. So again, you can check those out, dimensionsofcontinuity.com. There is a part where Wade has some lines about Remy taking the food when they go down into the barn, and he starts eating some food, and she's like, I don't think we should just take that. You know, it doesn't belong to us. And she leaves some money in the barn for it, you know, to make up for it. Arturo, which was interesting. Arturo was supposed to be the person who was beaten out by the tree, not Quinn. So they made a major change there. And he was supposed to be whipped, not just like beaten with fists, but like actual a whip, you know, cracking against, you know, John Rhys Davies. And I was wondering if that was something that Peckinpah had put in there, because there's a lot of, you know, animosity between Peckinpah and John Rhys Davies, apparently.
In both these episodes we're discussing today, Quinn gets his shirt off, so.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that was the reasoning behind it.
I guess, yeah, that could be too. I mean, John Rhys Davies is a great actor, but we don't need to see him shirtless. So at the ending, okay, the ending was going to be a little different, and it was going to be a little strange. Basically, they would slide through the vortex, okay? And that's where the episode ended. But originally, they would land on the next world, and they would discover that they still had some electricity on them, like some residual electricity from the last world was still stuck in them. And when they touched each other, they could zap them. You know how you used to shock someone? You know, you rub your feet on the carpet, and then you shock someone? So it's kind of like that. That's what they were doing at the end of the episode. You know, just for fun, just zapping each other. And then there's a voice that asks, are they human? And then the other guy says, I don't know, but I'm not sticking around to find out. And they look up and they see human-type characters in the trees dressed in tailored hemp clothing, and they have tails. And then the two human plant tree creatures just run off, you know, swinging by their tails, they run away. I mean, it's an interesting idea, but obviously, production-wise, that'd be a little harder to do.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then finally, I don't know if you noticed this. I didn't notice it until I came across it on this one. I can't remember what site I saw it on. At the very end, when before they go to slide, Quinn is talking with Reed in the bunker, and they slide each other's hands across each other. Did you notice that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I was like, I didn't realize what that was, but that's from Stand By Me, from the movie that they were both in together years ago. That was part of their special, you know, handshake as you know, boy friends, you know, in that, not boyfriends, but you know, friends who are boys. You know, that was like one of their little, you know, things they do. Like today we do like the fist bump, you know, side hug type thing. So that's what they did in Stand By Me, the touching of the hand. I thought that was neat that they threw that in there. That was really cool.
Yeah, but if you didn't know that it was from Stand By Me, then it is actually a bit odd.
Yeah, it's like, what is that about? You know? And see, I just hadn't noticed it when it happened. When I first watched it, I never noticed it. This time I noticed it, of course.
Don't worry about it, because despite my father's ranting and raving about this all being the devil's work, he would never destroy your machine, because he's a true scientist at heart.
So he was once a scientist, then?
Yes. He was once involved with a research group for the government back in the 60s.
Even if Wade can find the timer, how are we going to get back into that loony farm and slide with no one watching?
Tasty, Mr. Brown?
Tastes like frogs frappéed in a Quasar.
Health food, Remy. Looks like microalgae.
Mm. Actually, it's grown underground in a pond. It's unfortunately the only source of vitamin B or protein that you're going to get here. So drink up. Cheers, my friend.
You know, I didn't get along all that well with my father either. I don't think I would have crossed him if I knew that this was going to be my punishment.
It's not that simple. Come on, drink.
All right, well, let's get into our discussion of this episode. So, to kick it off, they're mixing it up a little bit and decide to bobsled out of the vortex.
Right.
Which, I don't know. It's like, it makes you imagine, like, what they were doing. Like, they said that it was an easy 10 grand. So, obviously, they'd entered some sort of bobsled competition where the prize was $10,000. Right. And Wade was like, we're not going to make it in time. We're going to have to slide before we can race. And I was thinking, like, if they were even concerned that they could complete the race before the timer had to be activated, why right. would they do it? Because they would have to win the race, have some sort of ceremony, then get the $10,000, and then,
yeah.
and then right. slide. Yeah. So, I understand they want to try and, like, hype it up instead of just having them slide into another world. Try to right. do something interesting, but at the same time, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
At least they didn't crash this time, you know? They were all seated and, you know, they got through just fine, whereas before they're always, like, landing on top of each other, landing in garbage and, you know? So I'm okay with it. I thought it was, I was like, oh, this is different, you know? This is a different way to go through. You know what? And I've been meaning to say this for a while. I just keep forgetting because I never put it in the notes. I'm not quite sure, you know, where I would ever put it, but I just, it, When they slide into a new world, you know what it reminds me of? I don't know if you ever saw this show or not. It's an old TV show. It was one season. It's called Voyagers. If you like time travel, you will like this show. Now, it's an 80s show, so it's typical 80s show where it's a little bit cheesy. But basically, there's two time travelers, an older, you know, like a middle, not a middle age, probably in his 20s. A young guy, you know, but he looks older, and a young boy who are time travelers. And basically they travel using this little time machine on his belt that he presses like a pocket watch, and they go flying through space, basically dimensions. And when every time they land, they always crash to the ground. Like they land like in garbage, they land in the water, just like the sliders kind of do. It's always a rough landing, and they're always complaining about where they're landing. Why couldn't we have landed over there on the pillows, you know, instead of over here on the concrete? So it's just something that, you know, speaking about, you know, how they're getting out of the vortex, it just reminded me again of that. I figured now's the time to mention it. So it's a good show. You should check that out. I don't think it's on Netflix. I think you have to, you know, get it on like DVD.
Yeah, seek it out. No, I will check that out because I do like my time travel shows.
Yeah, it's probably the first time travel show that I really, really got into back in the day when I was a kid.
Interesting.
Well, anyway. Moving on, back to sliders.
So, there's a kid shows up, right? And he's got like surfboard or a snowboard. Yeah. And he starts riding this mini twister, right? Mm-hmm. And he gets into a bit of trouble. And it is just like...
His trouble is he never took acting lessons. That's what
the
trouble is.
Like, it's obviously like bad ADR, you know, that they've just thrown in there.
I know. Woo! Whoa! Where? Oh no!
Help me! And you know how much I hate child actors, but like yes. this kid did an alright job later. Like he's always scurrying around. I'm not too sure whose kid he is. I don't think he was Reed's kid.
No.
And we only ever saw like two other people maybe in the background later when they're underground with them. So I don't know. So he sort of, he was all right running around doing his thing. But yeah, here at the beginning, I was like, God, this is terrible.
Right. Well, you know what confused me is that I watched it and I took it back a couple times. I rewound a couple times and Arturo says, oh, that tornado is highly electrically charged. And I'm like, it is? How do you know that? And I'm looking at it and like, there's no sign of electricity on that tornado. If you go back and watch that scene, I don't see any electricity around that tornado at all. Now, later on, there's tornadoes and you could see the electricity, you know, you see the little bolt of lightning or whatever. But in this first one, there was no electricity there at all. I'm like, maybe they just forgot to put in the electricity on that particular scene because it confused me when I was watching it this time. I'm like, I don't see any electricity. It looks like a normal tornado to me.
Yeah, and it's not until after the tornado as well that they sort of get into about how the time is not working.
Right.
They come across the water, but that's all electrified. So, yeah, you're right. It is It's a little off. It's an interesting concept, though. Just a world,
well,
like,
yeah.
They can't use any electrical devices because of the way this world is charged.
And that explains why, you know, Franklin's little community there is, like, against technology.
And, they give the whole thing about the lodestones and all that stuff. So it's interesting that, you know, we find this community and they're very, like, Amish-like, like you said in the synopsis there.
Well, yeah, and they were hesitant. Like, I think, was it Remy who was hesitant about going down there? And, like, Quinn says, like, well, we're explorers, so let's explore. And I'm like, really? You're explorers? I mean, I thought you were just trying to find your way home. I mean, I know you explore the worlds, but not because you are specifically explorers. You're just trying to stay out of trouble until you get home. You know, I thought that was, well, okay, so now they're explorers.
Yeah, it's a little change up in the characters. I guess maybe at this point, it's been a couple of years, that maybe they would consider themselves more explorers. They want to find out more about the worlds they go to. It's almost as if it's an obligation at this point, you know. They're going to so many places. They would have to explore a bit, you know. They have to be able to tell people about what's out there.
Right. See, this, to me, I was thinking, well, you know what? It's probably good that they do that because it kind of, the show will suffer from the Gilligan's Island syndrome, where the whole idea is that they want to get home. But once they get home, the show's over in Gilligan's Island, you know? And same thing here. Once they get home, they could definitely go other places with it after that. But that's kind of like, that's been the main goal for the first two seasons. We want to get home, you know? Where's our home dimension? And we're going to kind of get away from that a little bit now, you know? It's like Star Trek Voyager. That was their thing, too. We want to get back to our quadrant. You know, we're stuck on this other quadrant. That's our whole goal, you know? So you kind of get stuck into this, like, well, that's once we get home, then that's it. That's the end of the show. So it's good that they're changing it up a little bit.
I think it's working for what it is. Because at the same time, it's like they kind of set up that it's unknown how many different worlds there are.
Right.
And it would make more sense that there are infinite worlds, really.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It would be stupid to think, like, there was only 100 or something like that. If you're going to go with parallel dimensions, all of them different, it has to be infinite because people make infinite amount of choices. So, it has to just keep going. They can hold out hope that they're going to randomly slide back home, but at the same time, it's probably not going to happen.
So we had them, they come into the town, and while they're in the barn, the timer obviously attracts the tornado. And during this whole thing where the tornado's tearing up the barn, Remy makes another reference to his time in the Navy about how he's never heard anything as loud as this since he's been on a destroyer in the Navy, and it got upturned in the Atlantic Ocean. So a little bit more with Remy's naval past also here.
And it makes you wonder why he didn't drown in the water,
exactly.
Considering he can't swim.
Exactly. I think we're just going to forget about that little thing and just go on forward, you know?
Yeah. Well, they do get taken out by this guy Franklin, who sort of runs the town. And he is just a big dick. Especially the revelation at the end, you know, like,
You
didn't think he was a dick throughout the episode, by the time you learn out exactly who he is, you're just like, what, man, you suck. You are the worst kind of person.
Exactly.
And all he ever does is talk about banishing people. Like every other word out of his mouth is the word banish. And if it's not banish, then it's the shine. Oh, she's got the shine on her.
Right. Yep.
But yeah.
No, I didn't like his character. I mean, you weren't supposed to like his character. So they did a good job with that.
Yeah. And, he's got a daughter and, you know, it's setting up this whole like Amish-like town where she's to be wedded to someone else. He had banished his own son at one point for breaking the rules. So his son is out there in the wasteland somewhere. Yeah. It's a cool setup, I think, though.
And that guy that she's supposed to be wedded to, I don't know, he seemed incredibly dim to me. Like, he didn't seem like the sharpest tool in the shed. I don't know. Maybe it's just the actor, his expressions, or what. I don't know. I was like, oh, my God. He does not seem very with it.
Yeah. And quite frankly, it seems more that their marriage is a marriage of convenience.
Right, right. Yeah.
It didn't seem like there was a lot of younger guys there. So it's like, he's around her age, so those two are going to get married.
Well, yeah, and they even said, well, you know, she's of childbearing age. We can use her, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Corey Feldman comes into the episode.
And obviously, you're a big fan of movies and everything, so you knew who Corey Feldman was. Does the general populace know who Corey Feldman is or was?
Well, you know, he did some big movies, I think.
Yeah?
Well, he did a couple of Stephen King movies, you know, including Stand By Me.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that's right. Stand By Me. Well, yeah, we talked about that. The Lost Boys, I remember.
Goonies.
Yeah, see, those are the big ones I remember. But see, those were, when I was a kid, I was watching those. So I was just wondering the generation gap, if people still watch those, you know, like yourself. You know, you're a big movie person, so you would have seen those, definitely. But the general populace, I wonder if they knew who he was, if they're not into movies. Because, you know, like, movies today are very different movies from the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. Even though he did do a lot of big movies, they were when he was younger. Like, he was a right. He was a good child actor. As he went mm-hmm. on in years, yeah, his celebrity waned a bit. And he of course, yeah. like, got into that big trap of a lot of Hollywood child stars where he got into drugs and
right.
things like that. So his
luckily,
career
he
went
got
downhill.
Out, though. Yeah, he got out of that, though, and his friend, you know, Corey Haim, of course, did not.
Yeah, yeah. And they actually did have a TV show not long
oh, yeah?
before Corey Haim died.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So
I never watched it, but I heard about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, I never watched it either, really. I'm, you know, I know who Corey Feldman is. I don't really care that much about his.
Well, you know, we just lost him as a listener now, you know.
But yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm pretty sure I knew back when this first aired that he and Jerry O'Connell were in Stand By Me together, because that's right. okay. that's Jerry O'Connell's big thing, you know, when he sort of, his celebrity became a lot bigger, you know, from doing Sliders and then getting into movies and such. It was the big bit of trivia was that he was the fat kid in Stand By Me, and now he's this, you know,
right.
tall, quite muscular, leading man type. Yeah. So it's cool to kind of see Corey Feldman here. And
oh, yeah. Definitely.
At the same time, it kind of makes you think, is this like a favor for Corey Feldman? Because, like I said, his career would have been pretty much down in the dumps around 1996. So,
yeah.
Is this Jerry O'Connell throwing him a bone? I think maybe.
Probably, yeah. I'd have to agree.
And then we get another scene where Quinn protects a brutalized woman.
Again.
Yeah.
Again.
What's her name? Jenny? This is like getting
Jenny, yes.
beaten around at some point, so Quinn rushes in and saves her. I thought that was funny. Actually, it's weird to say I was laughing at this woman getting beat around, but when she's getting beat around, I'm like, oh, Quinn's right there. He's going to save her. And of course, he comes in and like punches that dude. I just burst out laughing just because of, you know, the fact that we've been commenting on that fact.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. All right. So they go down to the bunker, and they actually have to, in order to save the slide, they have to reverse the polarity. There you go. We got it. Reverse the polarity. And then they can save, you know, they can make the timer work again if they just do that. So I just thought that was interesting because we talked about that a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, I kind of like the stuff down in the bunker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, honestly, like thinking back to this episode, I was thinking, well, it was the little boy and Reed down in the bunker. Like, I just right. figured it was those two. You know, they'd found right. safety in this bunker. But watching the episode this time, I suddenly noticed there was two people in the background during that scene where they're all sitting at the table. Like, mm-hmm, two mm-hmm. people come in the background and, like, pick up some sleeping bags or something and then walk off with it. And I was like, oh, there's more people down there?
Yeah.
I mean, it was only two people in the background, so I don't know how many
right.
People are exactly down. Like, do they save everyone who's banished and put them down there?
I would imagine so. I think they did. And like, when Franklin was talking about outcast, I imagined a lot more people than just the two that we saw. And then those other two, of course, I just imagine there was a lot more that they just weren't in the particular scene. Like, it would have been nice if they had more people in the background or, you know, just around when you were interacting with Reed and his, little boy there.
It would
have been nice.
It made me think of the Matrix, actually. Because in the first Matrix, you know, they talk about Zion, the place, mm-hmm. you know, the place close to the center of the earth where it's still warm. And right. I always figured like it was a few people or something like that. And then you get into the two sequels and suddenly there's like tens of thousands of people at Zion. I was like, this is not what I imagined when you guys were talking about it in the first movie.
You know, the Matrix, the first one was awesome. The other two, I just cannot. No. I liked the first one. I thought it was great. I thought it was such a neat idea. And there was no need to have a sequel. You know, It left things so nice and open. I was like, oh, that's a good ending. Now just imagine what the possibilities could be. Don't actually film it. Just imagine. Okay. Just imagine. Because the imagination had so many more greater possibilities than what actually was put on screen.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going off on a lot of different shows.
We are.
Well, this episode. We're sorry, people, but.
Well, what did you reckon of what they did to Wade? Like, it was kind of like a witch thing, you know, like drown her like a witch or something.
It was so weird.
But it was just like, well, she's an outspoken woman. Let's drown her.
Exactly. He would fit in well with the Republican Party today, I think. did I say that? I'm so sorry. The opinions of this podcast does not reflect those of everyone on this podcast. So just there you go. When they dunked her, you know, they put her underwater for like, I don't know, 20 seconds, and then they bring her up. Like, you're not drowned yet? Take her back down again. No, you're going to need to leave her down there for quite a while if you really want to drown her.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it was a little weird. It was like a witch trial type thing.
Yeah, it was just. And, you know, these aren't like non-civilized people. Like, he was a scientist. This world was a normal world. And suddenly he goes like crazy Amish witch hunter banishment guy within a few years. Like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we're lucky because, you know, in the very end, everything's fine. And Franklin turns around. We've got dad and boy back together again.
Yeah, it's...
It happens so quickly. It's just like all of a sudden, well, you're going to have to help me, son. Okay, dad, let's do it. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, I know. Can you really trust the guy?
I know.
He destroyed the world, for one.
Yeah.
Like, it was his fault. And then number two, he had this town where if you didn't do what he said, he threw you out in the desert to die. Sure, like, a bunch of the banished people were able to survive, but God knows how many people he got killed because he banished them or drowned them or, you know.
Put them in the headstocks or whatever, you know?
Like, he's an evil dude. Like, to hell with that guy. Like,
well, and then to finally the final thing that I was like, oh, come on, again, they open the vortex in the air.
Yeah,
you know, as if they're not fighting enough here with the whole vortex and
like with all the twisters coming
right the twisters right. Yeah, we've got enough going on with the whole twisters, but now we have, oh, let's open up the vortex in the air. Why not?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, okay, they've got, like, a small little barrier that they're in where the polarity has been reversed. So maybe they can't just, like, open it in front of them or something, like, some reason. Open it on the ground, then. Point it at the ground and do it there. Don't point it into the air above you so you have to jump up into it.
Exactly.
Again, it was like the other episode we just talked about where it's, like, this good idea, but there's just a few things in there that just break it up. And then the ending just really just... Yeah, whatever. Especially Franklin.
You brought the twisters.
It was a mistake. I never meant for any of it to happen.
All this time? We followed you. We trusted you.
I did the best I could! I tried to hold us together!
Stop lying to yourself.
You've held all these people hostage. You're a jailer, not a leader. You knew if they ever found out the truth, you'd be finished. So you just kept lying and lying until the lies became myth. Jacob, please.
Maybe it's too late for you. I don't know. But you can still help them. Finish your work. Find the answers to stop these twisters.
I can't.
Then spend the rest of your life trying.
If you want redemption, then start with these people. They don't belong here. It's not their world.
You need to help me. I can't do it alone.
All right, so let's get into some messages in time.
Okay, so a lot of people talking about the electric twister acid test were not big fans of it either. They said It's got a really stale plot. It's very predictable. You know, the conflict between Franklin and Reed, the daughter being the traitor, the jail escape, losing the timer again. All this stuff is stuff that we've seen over and over again. And it just made it very just like a blah episode. There was nothing real like earth shattering or exciting about it, really. They said it would have been better if they had made some of the outcasts bad instead of just being, you know, outcasts were good, you know, and then Franklin was bad. What if some of the outcasts were actually bad and they maybe injured someone as they were trying to steal food? Maybe they actually were stealing food, you know, maybe instead of having the coils not working, maybe they have to resort to Franklin actually using some of his technology that he made to save them, you know? Instead, it's just like, oh, they just have to turn a few buttons and we're okay. We're out, you know?
Yeah, give Franklin a proper redemption.
They also said there were some good Wade and Quinn moments when they are reminiscing about their families. And I thought, yeah, that actually was pretty good. And like you said, when the boy and Arturo were talking, it was a nice little moment there, you know, that the two guys shared. Again, like you said, Franklin was just being a manipulative control freak, you know, and people thought it would be better if they had explored him a little more. And that's what we said, you know, more justifications for why he was doing what he did, you know, give him a little bit more character.
Yeah.
And then finally, the ratings were actually really good for this episode, despite most people not liking them. And people are theorizing that the reason the ratings were good for it was because they were tuning in for the whole Twister aspect of this episode.
Right.
Apparently, when it aired, they really focused on the whole tornado part because that same week that this episode came on, they were releasing Twister on home video. So there was a lot of stuff going on the airwaves about that. So that's what they were saying, that, you know, that's why it did so well, because people were like, oh, let's see this episode. It's like that Twister movie that's coming out, you know?
Yeah.
And then some people were saying, no, this didn't have anything to do with Twister at all. But I mean, it's pretty obvious that they were trying to play to that audience.
Yeah, and the title of the episode has Twister in it.
Well, yeah, so. Exactly. So now we've got messages in time for Dead Man Sliding, and a bunch of people were saying they wanted a more well-known game host. They wanted, like, Pat Sajak, you know, to appear. Just like in the old days when we had Judge Wapner appear.
Yeah.
They said, we want Pat Sajak. That would have been cool to have him on there playing the game show host, you know. Because, again, people didn't realize that, what did I say his name was? Donnie Most. They didn't realize he was a celebrity. I don't know if you noticed this. I noticed it. There on the tables for the people who are watching the show, there were Simon games that they used to judge.
Right, yeah, the blue, red, yellow.
Right. Yeah. I didn't notice that the first time when I saw it back in the day, but I did see it. I did notice it this time when it was coming on. I was like, oh my God, that's Simon. All right, and also with those, talking about those Simon games, someone had said in the forums there in 1996, they talked about a Doctor Who episode that did something similar, where there were computer screens on Doctor Who, but they were showing the video game Dig Dug. I guess it looked futuristic or something. So, yeah, I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan, so I'm not sure what Doctor that was from, but that was in there. People were saying, again, that this episode just very, very predictable. You know, just too much, just like, yeah, you expected that to happen, Nothing exciting, really. They did say that it was interesting because they were saying the wormhole was a little different this time, because at the very end, they jumped downwards into the portal from the cliff and they're sliding straight up and down. But then when we see them in the next world, they're coming out sideways, you know, like normal. And so someone made a joke. He goes, well, I guess they aren't parallel dimensions. They're perpendicular dimensions. And I was like, that's pretty good. Pretty good. See what you did there. And then finally, someone was wondering about the actual vortex itself. Is the tunnel, the vortex, is it like water? Like, do they swim in it? Can they move around? Can they talk? You know, or, you know, what if they get separated in the vortex? Does that mean anything? So just wondering about the actual, you know, the dimensions inside the vortex. What is it like in there? Which is something they never really explored.
Yeah, the vortex did actually look exceptionally better in the episode. They had some nice close-ups of it and everything.
Right, so. Right.
Okay, so no messages from Earth Prime this week.
Not this week.
Oh. You guys know we love to hear from you, so yeah, send us your thoughts on what we're talking about. We love to hear from you.
Yep, or if you have an alternate take on it, let us know.
Send us your fanfic even. You know?
There you go.
Maybe something with Punk Wade in it.
Punk Wade and Punk Wade and Quinn. Yeah, there we go.
Okay, well, next week we're discussing two more episodes. They are The Guardian and The Dream Masters.
Yeah, you know, like, I was just thinking, like, this week, you know, we have these two episodes, you know, and I kind of liked Dead Man Sliding. Really didn't like Electric Twister Acid Test. And, like, next week, I remember both these episodes, and I remember The Guardian, really liking The Guardian, and The Dream Masters, not so much. You know, it's like, I wonder if this is how it's going to be. Like, we have one that we really like, one that's, like, just, you know?
Well, it's like they say about any TV show. If they were all exceptional episodes, then none of them would be exceptional.
There you go. That's a good way of looking at it. All right. Okay. We'll take it. All right. Well, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our website at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity, earthprime.com, and the active forum over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always send us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Very easy. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Helps build up the listener interaction and, of course, the listenership of the episodes as well. So, yes, please and thank you. Time to get out of here. So I'll just say, until next time, I was with Chicago Bob and we were at Del Mar Racetrack all day.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.